Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
What's going on, everybody, and good morning. Today is Monday, January 13th, a Victory Monday, and this is your daily Go Birds morning update, giving you all the Eagles news you need to know, as well as what to keep an eye out for today. And, well, it is officially a divisional week playoff pod. The daily pods continue. We roll on. I know me and James said it on the postgame pod, but man, I'm so pumped we get another week. I was driving home from the stadium after the game thinking, imagine if we were doing locker clean out this week, but we're not. The Eagles have another game. We have another opponent to preview. Another week of talking about the Eagles, and I got a feeling after watching that team on Sunday, we're going to have another week after that. So, just a little heads up, I'm recording this prior to the end of the Washington-Tampa Bay game. Yes, I know if the Buccaneers win, that means they're playing the Eagles, but I talked to James, talked to Tucker, and we decided that we're just going to focus this morning daily pod on the game itself. And as you know, at 10 a.m. Monday morning on YouTube, me and James will be live. And at that point, we could know who the Eagles are playing, because if the Buccaneers win, it'll be the Buccaneers. If not, we'll talk about who we want to win Monday night and the implications of that. But let's not move on too quickly from what was an exciting win for the Eagles on Sunday. They beat the Packers 22-10, a score that I actually think does indicate how close it was. I know, and I'll be curious to see what you guys have to say, but I think there will be a group of fans that'll say it was much closer, they could have lost it, and there is some truth to that, but like, they kind of had complete control of that game for the majority of it. I mean, the way the defense played, the fact that they didn't turn the ball over, they did have the ball a little bit more than the Packers, not by a ton, but they did have more time of possession, they averaged more yards per play, they almost had the same amount of yards as the Packers. For as much as we want to talk about how the Eagles offense struggled, and obviously the Packers defense offense didn't get much going, it just never really felt like they were going to lose that game to me. There was no moment where I was like, oh man, like, here we go. I thought the offense needed to pick it up at times, and for the most part they didn't, but the defense had such good control. There was never really a point in that game where I thought, all right, maybe this is actually going to be the end of the season. So, since it's not the end of the season, let's get into what we have on the schedule for today. Let's talk about some of the injuries. We got some audio from players after the game. We're going to talk about the latest controversy with AJ Brown, which I think is ridiculous, but we will get into that. And we will have another daily pod. So, let's get right into it. On the schedule for today, Nick Sirianni scheduled to speak to the media at 3:15. Now, that could potentially change. It changes fairly frequently during the regular season, but especially with so much up in the air with the playoff schedule, I would keep an eye out for that potentially changing. But if you want to watch Nick Sirianni at 3:15, they stream it live, and it'll be streamed live on WIP for everybody to hear. So make sure you check that out if you want to hear what Nick has to say. If you can't, then I'll have everything he has to say for you on Tuesday morning's Daily Pod. So that is the only thing on the schedule for today. In addition to, again, 10 a.m., me, James Seltzer, YouTube, live pod, every day this week, starting today at 10 a.m. So let's get into the injury report. And unfortunately, it does feel like there is a serious injury to discuss here. So I was doing the post-game pod. I didn't get right down to the locker room, but some reporters were able to go right down. And I believe it was John Clark of NBC Sports Philly, the GOAT John Clark, that tweeted out a picture of N'Kobe Dean leaving the locker room with crutches and a knee brace on. Man, just super, super sad news. So we don't know the extent of the injury. Jalen Hurts was talking after the game and said he's praying for N'Kobe for a quick recovery. But the kind of tone of the way Jalen was talking about made it seem like the N'Kobe injury is not a good one. And it's tough because even if it is, let's say, best case scenario, maybe a knee sprain or something, I mean, it's just so hard. Like whenever, in my experience, and this is a very not doctor medicine way to look at it, whenever I see a player leave a game in crutches and a knee brace, it feels like they're always out at least 4 or 5 weeks. So obviously 4 or 5 weeks, I mean, the Eagles season, if they make it all the way to the Super Bowl, might not. I mean, like he is probably out for the playoffs. We can knock on wood, cross our fingers, pray for him, send good vibes, but it just doesn't feel like the N'Kobe injury, when we get news on Monday, is going to be good news. So feel awful for N'Kobe. He was having an awesome game on Sunday prior to the injury. He's been so huge for them this year. He's the heart of that defense in some ways. He's the green dot player. He gets them together. Jalen Hurts was talking after the game on Sunday about how the bond between the Georgia players really makes that unit better. And N'Kobe's a massive part of that. So losing N'Kobe, if that is the case, is definitely a big blow to this defense. Now, Oren Burks, when he's had to go in, has played well. Jeremiah Trotter Jr., I would assume, has improved throughout the season. I thought he played well against the Giants in that final game. So they do have some options there. But man, it's a blow to lose N'Kobe for sure. So much of the physical, tough nature that this defense has, I think, comes from N'Kobe, or at least N'Kobe's a big part of that. So we'll get more information later in the day on Monday, and we'll talk about it, obviously, in depth on Tuesday's podcast. But everybody just, send good vibes N'Kobe's way, because hopefully this is not something that will cause him to miss too much time into next season. You never know. Is there a shot he plays again in the playoffs? Let's hope. But it sucks to watch him, leave in crutches with a knee brace on. So outside of that, the N'Kobe injury, obviously a big one, but, Jalen Hurts briefly went in the medical tent on Sunday, but he left the game healthy, which is obviously great after he missed a few weeks. He called it his being on leave. So he was obviously after the game happy that they won. But I also think just getting that first game under his belt after missing time, I think was huge for him. So that's the injury report. We'll have more information on Monday, which we'll talk about on Tuesday. But that's where we are at right now. All right. So let's dive into some different aspects of the game. But first, let's talk about kind of the big story from, the sideline, I guess, or at least, kind of the controversy from the sideline. So I don't get a chance to watch a broadcast during the game. It's up in the press box, but it's hard to keep an eye on it. It's just, I only really use it for replays. So I got texts. It was funny, like during the game, I was like, doing work, watching the game, and I was getting texts like, Jack Fritz texted me, James texted me, some of my other friends texted me, and it was like, AJ's reading a book on the sideline. And in my head, I was thinking, it must be a playbook, as simplistic as that sounds. Like, there's no way AJ Brown is reading a literal book on the sideline. And then I saw one picture of it, and it looked like a book, but I didn't see the cover. And I was thinking, oh, it's probably something football related or whatever. So get downstairs from doing the post-game pod. Twitter is exploding talking about him reading this book. I didn't get a chance to be there when AJ was talking, unfortunately, one of the few times this year, but he did talk about reading the book on the sideline. And so from the man himself, here's what AJ had to say about reading the book on the sideline.
It's just, y'all just caught me that time. I'm doing it every drive, regardless of, like I said, if I score a touchdown or drop a pass, that's something how I refocus.
Is there a certain passage that you read from?
Yes, I always revert back to like the beginning of the book. It states, if you can just have a clear mind and let me see, what did it say? If you have a clear mind and remember that nothing else matters, clear mind and clear consciousness, nothing matters, negative or positive. You're willing to take risks, and I go back to it, and it also says, if you're humble, you can't be embarrassed. So no matter what happens, like in the game or whatever happens, I'm just going to just stay free, play free, keep going, take risks, So.
Were you frustrated when you were reading the book?
No, I was not frustrated at all. I figured that's what y'all probably thought. I wasn't frustrated.
Why y'all always think I'd be frustrated? I read the book. Yeah, I like to read. So
here's my opinion of this. And before you think I'm just making an excuse for AJ, let's remember. I thought when he said the passing thing after the Carolina game, I thought that was a big deal. When Brandon Graham said what he said about Jalen and AJ, I thought that was a big deal. Last year, when AJ didn't talk for 3 weeks, I thought that was a big deal. So I definitely think there are times where AJ has kind of either misplayed it or there's been warranted controversy around something he's done. This right here is insane that people are reacting to this in a negative light. And maybe it's a strawman argument. Maybe there's not as much of it, and I'm just reacting to some of the vocal minority. But man, like, I don't think it's rude he read the book. I don't think it's disrespectful. I don't think it's a negative whatsoever. Like, he is, let's not act like he's like sitting there and reading for a half hour. And from what I've been told, he has that book throughout the season. He has it almost every week on the sideline. So clearly it's something he's done before. I think this was the camera caught it. I think it was because the offense was struggling. It felt like it was a bigger deal. AJ didn't have a huge game. I think he maybe ended up with more than one catch, but he certainly didn't have, you know, a massive game. I think it's a positive. So I think that if he is on the sideline and he knows that, like, let's be honest, like, this is good self-reflection by AJ. He knows, like, maybe sometimes he needs to calm down or he needs to, like, get back centered. If he wants to have a book with, like, I haven't read it, obviously, but it seems like it's like motivational quotes or like quotes about, you know, little passages about like calming yourself down and like getting in the right mental space. I'm fine with that. I'm sure all of us have weird things we do at work that other people don't do. If you have a cubicle job, you probably have things in your cubicle that you look at that helps you be better at your job. I have, for me, a bracelet that my wife made me that I wear to all Eagles games as like a reminder to like believe in myself and be confident. Like, everybody has little things they do at their job. The difference is AJ just has cameras all over the place. So if AJ knows that he can get like worked up on the sideline and sometimes he needs something to like calm him down, I think this is an awesome thing that he does this. I might even buy the book. I think it's super cool. I don't think AJ deserves any criticism. I don't think it is a big story. Jalen said afterwards he's seen the book on the sideline. I think this is a positive that he does this. So it reminded me a little bit of how Nick yelled at the fans after Cleveland and me and James did the postgame pod and I got downstairs and it was like, whoa, like this blew up. So it's not that. This is very different because they won. So I think it gets viewed in a positive light. But had they lost the game, I think people would have reacted even more negative to it. And I don't think they should have. So I will come to AJ's defense on this one. I really, really don't think it was a bad thing whatsoever. All right, let's talk about the game itself. So within the postgame pod, me and James talked a lot about the defense. We talked about the offensive struggles, the toughness of the team, and we talked about the four turnovers, but we mostly talked about the defensive ones. We probably didn't give enough credit to the start of the game, and frankly, a play made by what will be the team's new starting linebacker, Oren Burks just absolutely drilling Keyshawn Nicks and forcing a fumble. Nick Sirianni talked about it afterwards, and here's what Nick had to say.
It was a tone setter. Oren has been a, you know, really good player here for us the entire season. You know, he went in there and played good when N'Kobe went down at linebacker as well. He played good last week at linebacker, but he's always been a spark for us on special teams. And I remember Howie, when we signed him, was just like, hey, this guy is one of the best third, fourth linebackers in the NFL. And we were so excited to get him. And he's a special teams stud. And he's shown that, right? I think he's forced two fumbles now on the year on special teams. But that was a big-time hit, big emphasis for us this week because Nixon's a phenomenal football player. I have so much respect for their special teams coach and their assistant coach, who I actually had a chance to work with as well. They're really good coaches. I just can't say enough about Green Bay and their players and their coaches. That's a good football team. But just a big-time play by Oren and Jake by placing it the right place. Jake was phenomenal kicking the kickoffs today. And then we beat the blocks that we needed to beat in that particular case and made a big-time play. You can't start a game better than that. Last time we played them, it didn't start great for us. That felt like 2 years ago, but it didn't start that great for us, right?
So, you know, the sense I got throughout the week being at the NovaCare is that they put a major big-time emphasis on kickoff coverage. They had, I think Nolan Smith was out there. They were really, really emphasizing it. They viewed it as something that the team really needed to work on. So I think it's a positive in a major way that the first kickoff coverage snap of the game, they force a turnover. We talk all the time about Nick correcting mistakes, right? I forget what even year it was at this point, but they were getting flagged a bunch at the beginning of the season. He got that fixed. They were getting flagged by running that pick play all the time. They got that fixed. The turnovers last year were a problem. They've gotten that fixed. So Nick is very good at fixing problems. Doesn't mean he's fixed them all quickly. Obviously, they had the big greatest, you know, the biggest collapse in the history of the franchise last year, but he's good at fixing problems. So I thought the kickoff coverage was really, really good. And I thought that play just absolutely set the tone. And let's be honest, if that fumble is not caused and they don't get the ball where they got the ball, with how the offense played, they might have legitimately not scored more than one touchdown the whole game. So the fact that they got a short field, they capitalized on it quickly. I mean, it really, really set the tone. Like, after they went up 7-0 and then 10-0, it felt to me like the game was over. I said on the postgame pod, I thought they probably could have won it with even just 13 more points. And frankly, like, they could have, because the Packers only ended up with 10 points. And yes, the game probably plays itself out a little bit differently. But I just thought that was such a tone setter by Oren Burks. You know, obviously, I'm lucky enough to work with Ike Reese, and he talks a lot about how when he was on special teams, like, that's a tone setting unit. Like, the plays they make get the offense going, get the defense going. They change games. And that's exactly what that was. So in 2022, when they went all the way to the Super Bowl, the special teams unit was a negative. Obviously, in the Super Bowl, it didn't help, but also throughout the season, it was a negative. This year, I think the special teams unit is a positive. And we talk so much about Jake Elliott, but there's other components of the special teams. And Oren Burks making that play, I mean, that was just from being in the stadium, like, the place went absolutely crazy. The sideline went crazy. They scored quickly to Jahan Dotson. And honestly, at that point, I knew that they were not going to lose the game. So I didn't think we gave that quote, not that quote, that that play enough credit. It was absolutely a massive play. So that was what Nick had to say about that. On the other side, we are going to talk some more about this game. Nolan Smith, Saquon, some of his plays, and talk again about the defense. So on the other side, a few more quotes from what was a victorious, happy locker room. But first, a word from our sponsors. Yeah, so it really was a happy locker room down there. And I got to say, one thing that was really cool about this game is there were so many former Eagles there, like so many. And I go to a lot of other NFL stadiums. Now, I don't go to a lot of other NFL stadiums for playoff games, but they're not normally like former Eagle after former Eagle after former Eagle up on the Jumbotron. And then, you know, obviously Bradley Cooper there, which was cool. Let me say this. Mike Trout. I'm sure he's a great guy. I'm super happy for him. Local guy. Love to see him do well. But the offense was playing great. They put Mike Trout on the Jumbotron and the thing fell apart. No more Mike Trout on the Jumbotron. He is not a Philly athlete. If he wants to be on the Jumbotron at Eagles games, he should play for the Phillies. And I don't even know if the Phillies want him at this point, but no more Mike Trout on the Jumbotron. It's too much. They've done it. He's gotten his like hat tip that he's a Philly guy. No more Mike Trout on the Jumbotron. The offense started to play worse after they did that. I thought it was a turning point in the game in the negative. But outside of that, the atmosphere was absolutely unbelievable. I thought Gilly the Kid coming out with the team was a great call. I think they should do it for every game from here on out. I think if they make the Super Bowl, he should run out of the tunnel with them. I also love that Gilly the Kid brought, and if you don't know, you need to look up Gilly the Kid and watch the celebration videos after the game where he dances. He has his friend with him dressed as an eagle, and he does it in his community and like, or his neighborhood or whatever. And his neighbors will walk out and start to dance with him. And there's this one guy that every time comes out with a broom and like dances with the broom. He brought that guy to the game. They did the dance outside the stadium and then brought that guy into the box. So super, super cool thing. I'm all about making Gilly the Kid like the Super Bowl run song. I think that would be really, really cool. So an awesome atmosphere at the game. Credit to Eagles fans. Like, didn't really get tense. There were a few moments of booze, but ultimately a really good showing from them. But what really set the tone for this game was the defense. And got a chance to talk to some of the defensive guys, but I actually think Saquon Barkley described the defense and how they played better than any of the defensive guys did. So here is Saquon talking about how the defense played.
Vic is dialing shit up. Them boys is over there balling, making plays. They got this, you know, the swagger that they have right now. They're over here doing this. And, you know, what I think we could do better is we could capitalize on the plays that they're making, the turnovers that they're making. I will say that that's something I think that we lacked on. Everyone want to get on if we're rusty or for this and then a third. Our defense went out there and got three turnovers. Our special teams got a turnover. And we scored on that drive. We scored a touchdown on the drive. But if we do that, you know, it's a different outcome. It's a different game. But at the same time, the same outcome would be the same. I mean, like, we both got to win.
So he notes in there that the offense has to do a better job creating, capitalizing on the turnovers. And he's right. Like, the fact that they got four turnovers and 22 points is not great. Against Washington, when they forced all those turnovers, they didn't do a great job capitalizing on those. So it's something they need to work on. But he's right. Like, this unit is playing with so much confidence and swagger right now. And it definitely has gone over to the fans and the media. Like, I think that when this team has a lead, you just feel confident that the defense is going to play well enough to hold it. Now, in the end of game situations, at times they haven't been great, individual possessions like Atlanta and stuff like that. But ultimately, this year, they have been really, really good. James said this on the postgame pod, and I think it's kind of as simple as this, that this defense rarely gives up over 20 points. Since the bye week, they've given up over 20 points one time, and that was when Kenny Pickett was the quarterback, and it was a weird game. We saw on Sunday, this offense can basically trip over 20 points. The Packers defense is pretty good. I think that they're not like an outstanding great unit, but the DVOA, the stats will tell you they are a very good defense. The offense did not play good, and they still got 22 points. So it's pretty simple, the formula moving forward. Don't turn the ball over. The defense plays like they have all year. And the offense just makes one or two big plays, and they're going to be a really, really tough team to beat. So I thought that the way Saquon described that, Vic styling it up and the team's playing with swagger, like really, really describes how this defense is playing. So one of the stars of the game, I thought, was Nolan Smith. Talked about it a little bit in the postgame pod, but wanted to give him a little bit more of a shine. And Nick Sirianni was asked about Nolan Smith, and again, like, this is what you want to hear from your head coach if you're a player. So here's Nick talking about Nolan Smith.
What have you seen in the growth from last year to this year in Nolan Smith, especially now in the big spot?
Yeah, Nolan has just continued to get better. Nolan, I gave him a game ball in there because just his efforts. I love Nolan Smith. I mean, I want my kids aren't going to play defensive end. I know that. My two sons aren't going to play defensive end. They're not going to have the genes to do so. But I want my sons to play football like Nolan Smith. Before my kids go out to play any sport, I say have fun, play hard, be physical. And that guy is the definition of those things. He has fun out there. He does fun with his teammates. His teammates love him. He plays hard as I've ever seen anybody play. And this dude is a physical, physical, physical guy. I mean, I can't say enough about the way he plays this game. He loves this game. You love guys like that, and you love when they can. But that's a credit to Howie and his staff of the guys that they brought in here, right? Because we've talked so much about the guys that love football, the guys that are tough, the guys that, you know, have high football IQ. Those guys have a tendency, God willing, to reach their full potential. And I think that's what you're seeing, that the intangibles for Nolan Smith are there. And so you're seeing him get better each week and each time he steps on the field because, you know, when you have those intangibles particularly, you have no choice but to get better. Like, you just get better. And Wash has done a great job with him. Vic's obviously done a great job of putting him in position to succeed. Howie, does a great job of getting him in here. And I think that, you know, it shows you and everybody, like, patience, right? Guys might not come in and just be, world beaters, even though they were ones in college. It might not be world beaters right away. It takes some time and to put it, but we've seen, Nolan grow into this player that was able, the things he was doing today that helped us win a playoff football game. So, I can't say enough about Nolan. I could go on all day about that.
I'm not taking a victory lap. That's not something I would do. But, man, Nolan's really turning into the player I saw that rookie year in training camp. I remember doing the post-practice pods with James and being like, Nolan's going to have double-digit sacks. Nolan's going to be a great player. And obviously that didn't happen in 2023. He barely played. But man, now that I watch this guy out there, like, he's the guy I saw in training camp. He's just all over the field. I remember in training camp, he used to sprint across the field on running plays. He's been outstanding against the run this year. He was outstanding against the run on Sunday. But what he did in training camp that he's now able to do is he's impacting the passer. That sack early on Jordan Love, I thought was such a tone setter for the game. Like, for as much as the Oren Burks fumble set the tone and then Jalen gets a touchdown to Jahan, man, that defense and Nolan Smith really set the tone in controlling the game. And Nolan was an absolutely huge part of that. And we had so much worry about the pass rush going in through, not so much going into the playoffs, but early on in the year, we had a lot of worry about the pass rush, and it was not a problem tonight. Jordan Love never looked comfortable. He was not good in the pocket. Nolan was all over the place. Jalen Carter got good pressure. Milton Williams, I thought, had a good game. But credit to Nolan Smith, to have the disappointing year he had last year, to not start off great and to turn into player he's turned into. It's like Nick said in there. I mean, if you have the right attitude, like, you're mostly going to reach your potential. And it's very clear Nolan has the right attitude and is getting close to reaching his potential. So I thought he was outstanding in the game tonight. All right. So I wanted to end with two more things. One, about situational football, and two, a clip that I almost guarantee you Nick is going to show in team meetings this week. So first, let's talk about situational football. So the end of the game, Saquon springs loose, definitely could have scored. He goes down, game over. Saquon was asked about why he did that, and outside of the obvious reason that it ended the game, he gave an answer I didn't think of, but I thought it was a good one. So here's Saquon talking about why he went down on that final run.
No Moss, situational football, first down ends the game. You never know. I break that long run, I keep running. I pull a hammy, someone's chasing me, they pull a hammy, we lose the guy for next week. Get down, put a smile on your face, and move on. That's the thing that matters most.
Man, Nick is gonna love that answer. Like, the biggest thing I think this coaching staff emphasizes is situational football. The team and the players talk about it so much, about the things they bring, about what Nick says, how much he emphasizes it. That is situational football to a T. Like, that will be on one of Nick's teach tapes for years to come, about what you do in that moment. That's Saquon Barkley running free. Hasn't had an outstanding game. He played well, but like, that's a chance to, you know, he wants the record for most total yards in the postseason. But man, that is his play right there, and he goes down to end it. I never thought about how injury prevention is a big part of that. Like, he doesn't have to worry about anyone else getting hurt if he goes and makes that and just goes down. So I thought that was really cool. But the other thing I wanted to end the pod with, that I know I would bet Nick is going to show in a meeting this week. So at the end of the game, Packers get a personal foul for kind of throwing Saquon down after the run. Saquon does the little celebration. It ends the game. Everyone's going crazy. But part of that is when Saquon gets thrown down, Jalen Hurts runs to his defense and gets in the face of the Packers defensive lineman that did it. For all the talk about how quiet Jalen is, how he doesn't show emotion on the sideline, and like, you know, how he should probably, and I think the Eagles believe this, like, maybe be a little bit more talkative and getting to connections with his teammates at times in his career. That play right there, like, that is why players ultimately like playing with Jalen Hurts. Like, that was an awesome moment. How many times do you see quarterbacks get in the face of opposing defensive linemen for a teammate? It just doesn't happen much. Quarterbacks like stay out of the fray mostly. And when Nick talks about how this team, they play harder for each other, and Lane Johnson says they have a little bit more on the line because they play hard for each other, like, that clip right there, Jalen Hurts getting in the face of like a 300-pound defensive lineman to, you know, defend his teammate Saquon, that first of all has only been his teammate for a year, but regardless is, you know, his teammate. That is something, like, when Nick talks about tough and together, that right there is tough and together. And while the game wasn't pretty, Jalen didn't play great. The offense needs to play better next week. I still leave this game feeling like this team is going to the Super Bowl, because while they have to play better against the Lions, I saw tonight once again that they will be tough enough against the Lions. And that the Lions aren't used to getting hit in the mouth, and they're certainly not used to getting hit in the mouth, to hitting the other team in the mouth and having that team repeatedly get up. The Eagles are going to be impossible to knock down. Doesn't mean they'll definitely win the game. I think they will, but it's the Lions. I don't think they fully are aware of what's coming their way when the Eagles play them, if they play them. Maybe we'll get the championship game here in Philadelphia. So that'll do it for today's Daily Pod. Thank you guys so much for listening. Got a chance to meet some listeners outside of the pregame show on Sunday. Always great to meet you guys. I was starting to think maybe a meetup in the Super Bowl if they get there. Like, I just can't wait. I'm super excited for this week. 10 a.m. if you're listening to this on your drive in the morning, first of all, thank you. I appreciate it. But if you're listening prior, 10 a.m., me and James live, talking about the game, talking about their playoff opponent and all those good things. So, until then, with another week on the line, he's Elliot, I'm James. Talk to you guys later.